mornings, I'm Chris Oakes, and coming up today, the latest in our series of crime prevention conversations. National Prescription Drug Take-Back Day later this month serves as a reminder of the many dangers posed by unused medication in the home. Also this morning, State Representative John Cross will be with us to share his reaction to the governor's priorities laid out in last week's State of the State address. And happening around town in the ongoing celebration of their 50th anniversary, the Children's Mentoring Connection is honoring those who have made a profound impact on the lives of generations of young people in the community. This is the Good Mornings Podcast Edition for Wednesday, April 17th, 2024. So obviously the big news story this morning was yesterday's swatting incident at Findlay High School. Police got a call yesterday morning right around 9:30 or so from someone we don't know who, claiming to be at the high school holding students hostage with an AR-15, and a huge response turned out to be a hoax. And you know, the tough thing about this is that there's no way to not respond to the, you know, that the people who do this are looking for, they do it to elicit this huge response, but law enforcement can't not respond when they get a call like that. I think about you're watching a football game, for example, and somebody runs onto the field, right? The television cameras, they don't show it. They'll cut away, they'll go to commercial, they'll pan the crowd, or they'll show anything else. And the announcers sometimes won't even tell you what's going on. They'll talk about anything but the idiot who's, you know, come on the field, because the idea is they just want attention. And so you don't give them that attention, that de-centivizes people from doing stupid things like that. But in a case like this, you can't not respond. You can't not give them what they're wanting. You've got to respond to that. So it makes it really difficult to fight these sort of things. And as it happens, yesterday morning, just kind of on a personal note, so I had an errand to run after the show yesterday. So I left the studio and I got off the interstate there at the Trenton Avenue exit, and I had just gotten through the light there at Trenton and Broad, and heading down Trenton Avenue, and suddenly a State Highway Patrol car flies by me going the other direction, lights and sirens and the whole thing. And I see off in the distance, there's another car, whether it's State Highway Patrol or, you know, whatever, but I see lights and sirens, you know, down the street, another one coming this way. And then an ambulance goes by. And immediately I thought, well, there must have been an accident on the interstate because it was Highway Patrol. So I'm thinking there was an accident on the interstate. I'm thinking, thank goodness I got off the interstate when I did, because traffic's going to start backing up and it's going to be a nightmare and so on. Only later did I find out about this swatting incident and put two and two together, realize what was really going on. And it struck me that I was right there while it was, what was going on. I was just, you know, a few hundred yards away and was completely oblivious to what was unfolding, you know, right there at that very moment. And just going about my mundane business. And it just kind of struck me that you can be that close to an event of this nature that, thank goodness, it was not real, but could have been. It would have been right there and not even realizing it at the time. It just really struck me. Thank goodness all is well. As it happens, we're going to have Findlay Police Department Crime Prevention Officer Brian White with us this morning for our ongoing series of crime prevention conversations. And that he was already on the schedule for this morning, not to talk about that, but we'll talk a little bit more about that coming up here later on the program. But some of the other most interesting and buzzworthy stories of the day. Another postscript on last week's eclipse. The Ohio Department of Transportation is reporting an overall traffic decrease on the day of the eclipse. State officials had prepared for the potential of clogged roadways related to eclipse travelers, but ODOT says traffic was actually down about 4.5% compared to April 8th of last year, which is kind of interesting. Transportation officials reporting a bump in vehicle volumes on the days before and after the eclipse compared to last year, with an increase of nearly 13% recorded on Sunday, April 7th, and about 16% more traffic on Tuesday, April 9th. But it appears that drivers took heed of the advice to just, stay at home, not travel on the 8th to alleviate the traffic mess. And people did that in such large numbers that traffic was actually down from the year prior. Some roadways did see more traffic than usual on eclipse day, including there was a 21% increase along US 23 near Marion. I know the evening of April 8th, there was a multi-mile, there was like a 15-mile backup at the Ohio-Michigan line on Interstate 75 through Toledo. So there were some instances, but by and large, it was actually a lighter traffic day than last year. Kind of interesting. So this I found to be rather interesting and one of the first things to know this morning. If you are looking for work, but you do not have a college degree, where is the best place to find a job? CashNet USA analyzed census data and cross-referenced that with job advertisements to see which states and cities are best for those entering the workforce right out of high school. At the top of the list of states where you are going to find it easiest to find a job without a college degree: Maine, West Virginia, and South Carolina. Those are the top three. On the other hand, at the bottom of the list, New York, California, and New Jersey, the most competitive states for those without a college education. Fort Myers, Florida, is the best metro area if you are a high school graduate. There are 1.2 non-college graduates for every one entry-level role. So you don't have a whole lot of competition in Fort Myers if you don't have a college diploma. On the best cities list, Dayton is at number 20. That is the only Ohio city on the best cities for those without a college degree list. Dayton at number 20. Conversely, at the bottom of the list of cities, New York City, there are over 41 non-college graduates per entry-level job listing. So a lot more competition for those jobs that don't require a degree. Toledo is actually on the worst city list, 44th among the worst places to be looking for a job if you don't have a college degree. So kind of interesting. We're looking for a job. This is an item that jumped out at me for the ethics implications here. Apparently, now this is the story. Amy Harris has pleaded guilty to conspiring to transport Ashley Biden's stolen diary just weeks before the 2020 election. Ms. Harris sold the diary and other belongings of the president's daughter to Project Veritas for $40,000. Prosecutors said the belongings were left behind by the Bidens in a home at Delray Beach, where Ms. Harris found them when she moved in, discovered the items a couple of days after the Bidens left. And she, rather than contest, she knew who they belonged to, but rather than contact the Bidens to return the items, she instead sold them to Project Veritas. Ms. Harris apparently texted a co-conspirator in the scheme Coming with stuff that neither one of us have seen or spoken about. I can't wait to show you what Mama has to bring Papa. That's what she texted to her co-conspirator on that. She was sentenced to a month in prison and 3 years of probation, and she must also repay the money that she earned from the sale of those personal items that didn't belong to her. So it just kind of raises the ethics question of whether it is ever permissible to purchase these kinds of items. Is this newsworthy? You know, as those of us in the news business, we're constantly thinking about these sort of ethics conundrums. If you come across, say, the private diary of the daughter of the president or a person who wants to be president, is that fair game to report on? Or is that, you know, an invasion of privacy? It's kind of interesting. And of course, these days, it seems like there are no rules anymore. She was found guilty of selling those items. Kind of interesting. And this is maybe the biggest news story of the day. The talk about the first things you need to know in the morning. Get your day started. What better way to enhance the look of Crocs? You're familiar with the footwear, Crocs. What better way to enhance the chic look of a pair of Crocs than with a potato chip holster? Believe it or not, that is exactly what the folks at Pringles were thinking with their new collaboration with the slip-on shoe brand, the Pringles Crocs collection. According to the advertisement for this, three limited edition Pringles-inspired designs in fan-favorite Crocs styles, an array of Pringles-themed charms, and even a new Pringles flavor inspired by the partnership. It is called Croctail Party. I'm not sure that I want Pringles-flavored footwear. I don't think that the Pringles Crocs Classic Crush Boot features a playful pop of classic Pringles red and a stacked crisp heel and a first-of-its-kind custom holster to store a grab-and-go Pringles can so that fashionistas and snackers alike can carry their favorite crisps in their favorite shoes. Shoe lovers and snackers around the world now have a chance to snag the collection with prices starting at just $20, because no one on earth would pay more. That's, if you're interested, they're available now. As a matter of fact, went on sale yesterday, the Pringles Crocs collection. See, I told you this is something you want to know about first thing in the morning, right? There you go. Some of the most interesting and buzzworthy stories to get your Wednesday morning started.
WFIN News, I'm Matt Demchek. Your WTOL 11 weather. Showers and storms possible today, a high in the mid-70s. Showers and storms possible tonight, low in the mid-50s. Finley High School went through another swatting situation on Tuesday morning. Police Chief James Mathias says a call came into dispatch on Tuesday morning about a person in the school with a rifle holding two students hostage. He says the school was thoroughly searched by police and no threats were found and everybody was safe.
It's frustrating for the parents and for the students and the faculty that's involved with it, because they only know a limited part, and it's frustrating for us as well that, that these continue to happen.
Swatting is a term used to describe the action of making hoax calls to report serious crimes to emergency services to elicit a large police response. There was also an active shooter hoax at the high school in September of 2022. Get more of our conversation with the chief and the story on our website. The Finley Municipal Court will be holding its 7th annual Safe Surrender Day on Thursday. Judge Alan Hackenberg.
We moved this event from typically a late summer, early fall to April nationally being known as Second Chance Month.
He says people with an active bench warrant who report to the court on Thursday will not be arrested. Instead, they'll work with designated court staff to solve their legal issues. Learn more about Safe Surrender Day and the story on our website. Orange barrel season is getting underway in Ohio.
The warm weather comes in, so do those road construction zones. This week is National Work Zone Awareness Week. The national theme of this year's week is work zones are temporary. Actions behind the wheel can last forever. Officials are urging drivers to reduce speed and be aware of workers.
ONN's Tracy Townsend reporting. The Findlay-Hancock County Public Library has announced its Tell-A-Tale Writing Illustration Contest winners, and they say they loved getting the opportunity to read all the amazing stories and would like to commend all the young writers and illustrators for their hard work and creativity. See a list of all the winners and some of the illustrations in the story on our website. Remember, you can always get more news online anytime at WFIN.com.
So today's cover story, Findlay Police Department Crime Prevention Officer Brian White is with us this morning for another in our ongoing series of crime prevention conversations. A couple of things we want to talk about, including Prescription Drug Take-Back Day and the crime implications of that, which I think is kind of interesting. We'll get to in just a moment. Want to talk briefly about the incident yesterday at Findlay High School, another swatting incident. I know that there's not a whole lot you can say about this particular incident. It's still an active investigation, but why is it so difficult to combat or prevent these things?
Well, the biggest problem is really technology, right? I mean, technology definitely has its good uses, but also has its nefarious uses. Mm-hmm. And when people are making these types of complaints, they are doing so from maybe a different country, maybe a different state.
Yeah.
And in many cases, they're very difficult to track.
Yeah. And of course, the irony there is that it is the same type of technology that allows you to respond more quickly.
Absolutely.
To incidents like that when they are reported.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's one of the benefits to us is that when someone calls in a complaint, it's very easy to pinpoint where this person is. Mm-hmm. But when people utilize technology to essentially bounce their signal around to different locations, or even spoofing, also burner phones. People are using phones that aren't registered to them. Mm-hmm. It makes it incredibly difficult to track these people down.
Yeah. I know we've talked about this before. One of the dangers in this is that obviously when you get a call, the odds are that it is a hoax, but you can never assume that. And you have to assume that it is legitimate.
Yeah, absolutely. And you see that in our response. Mm-hmm. Everyone that was around the school yesterday saw multiple police agencies, ambulances, fire trucks, everything, because we are working on the assumption that this is 100% true. And we mm-hmm. have to, because at one time that we don't.
Exactly. And I wonder how difficult is that in a mindset when you get that call to focus on this may be the time that it's not a hoax, when you know in the back of your mind that more than likely, it's not real.
Well, by all means, this would probably be the most stressing incident that anyone in safety services could possibly face in the course of their career. However, that's why we train on a regular basis. We do in-service training on this type of response, as well as coordinating agency responses. Mm-hmm. So it's something that we train on a regular basis.
And by extension, I would imagine one of the fears would be that cry wolf effect among those who might be impacted. You talk about students, teachers, parents who, again, it happens so often where it's just a swatting incident, it's a mm-hmm. hoax, that you kind of let your guard down. And if it is real, are people taking it as seriously as they should?
Well, and that's what we hope. You know, for us, it provides at least a training element where we can see where our flaws are and what we can improve. We would mm-hmm. encourage anyone that's ever in a situation like this to kind of practice those same skills.
Yeah.
Right. However, we understand that in everyday life, this was not a hoax for all intents and purposes. Everyone that was living this, it was real to them. Right. And there is trauma that comes with that. And it's something that we have to address.
That's another whole different issue.
Correct.
Is that these things are traumatic, even when they don't result in a loss of life or a serious injury. And thank goodness that was the case yesterday. But that doesn't reduce the trauma in many cases. So certainly something to keep in mind. Kind of ironic that we had you actually on the schedule even before any of this happened. So kind of a fortuitous coincidence with respect to that. But the main thing we wanted to talk about this morning, Prescription Drug Takeback Day, that is actually coming up next Saturday, not this weekend, but next Saturday.
That's correct.
Tell us more about this.
Yeah, so we do actually two medication drives throughout the year, one in the spring, one in the fall, basically trying to take back all those unused expired medications that might find their way onto the streets or in someone's hands that's going to misuse them.
Yeah.
That's really the goal of this.
And that's the interesting part about this that you see. Not only, I mean, obviously, we want to prevent accidental overdoses or even intentional overdoses, and that gets a lot of the attention. But from a law enforcement standpoint, you see this as crime prevention.
Absolutely, because if we can take an element away from any situation, we talk about a crime triangle. Mm-hmm. It requires essentially three sides, including opportunity, which is what this is. Mm-hmm. If we can take that away, it eliminates the possibility of that crime occurring.
People don't realize that these medications that people may have in their home actually can end up on the street being sold to kids or really anyone.
Absolutely. That's a real threat. The more concern is someone wanders into our house, a family member perhaps, goes through our medicine cabinet, finds something that they want to take, and that's how it kind of starts. Now, when you look at the National Center for Drug Abuse Statistics, they talk about 6% of Americans over the age of 12 are misusing prescription medications. Now, 6% doesn't sound like a whole lot, but when you look at the numbers, you're talking millions, tens of millions of people.
You do the math. How often is that intentional or accidental? Because both of those are concerning.
Sure. When we talk about misuse, it could be a number of things. It could be the intentional misuse of medications, right? That's kind of the illegal drug trade that we talk about. It could be sharing our medications. Hey, I know someone has a headache. Here's one of my prescription Vicodin Percocet pills, right? Take this, you'll feel better.
Right.
It can also be taking more than we should. And we see this a lot with our elderly population. Maybe kind of forget, did I take my medications today? Right. That happens. I think we can all kind of relate to that to some degree.
Yeah. And with respect to the crime aspect of this, in addition to the possibility of these things ending up on the street, it also becomes something of a gateway for someone who might be curious.
Sure, absolutely. And one of the things that we see that's pretty common for us is we have a car break-in, especially summer months coming up. People going around checking car doors, seeing if the car's unlocked, getting inside, stealing the change. And some people keep their medications inside the car, and they end up getting swiped, right? So either that person ends up using them themselves or they end up reselling them.
Yeah. So we mentioned the Prescription Drug Takeback Day is actually next Saturday, and you have a concerted effort to do this
Correct.
On that day.
Correct. Right? Yep. Each one of these events we do, we usually take in a couple hundred pounds worth of medications. Mm-hmm. It's not just prescription medications. You can bring up anything that you want to get rid of, including over-the-counter medications. Mm-hmm. We'll take about everything. But that's going to be Saturday, April 27th, from 8 until noon.
Okay.
Pretty simple process. You just drive into the City of Findlay Municipal Building parking lot. We'll come out to the car, take the medications, and you can drive on your way.
Yeah, important to note, too, that that is not the only opportunity people have to dispose of their unused medications. This is actually an ongoing initiative.
Absolutely. The police department, we have a drop box there. You walk in the front door, don't even have to go through a security checkpoint. You can just drop them off, and basically it looks like an old mailbox. Same way over at the Hancock County Sheriff's Office.
Yeah.
Those are always open.
And I know a number of pharmacies actually have locations where you can drop off unused medications in a secure box that's similar to that.
Sure. And those are always kind of changing. It kind of depends on security and things like that. But there are some pharmacies that will take these as well.
Yeah. Bottom line is that we want to get these out of the home. And it's mostly an awareness thing next Saturday.
Correct. And most of us, I think we can all think of a medication that we had that we just, you know, maybe didn't end up taking the whole thing, although you should, right? Take all your medications as directed.
Exactly.
But we end up with medications that are expired on you just kind of sitting around. We want to get rid of them, but we don't want to flush them down the toilet because that creates an entirely different issue, right?
Different danger, right?
Don't want to throw them in the trash can, so we just hold on to them. Mm-hmm. Well, this is the avenue to get rid of them.
Yeah. To prevent accidental or intentional overdoses, to prevent crime, and you know these become unsafe if they're expired. I mean,
absolutely.
So that's
absolutely
an issue as well. And before we let you go, also want to mention this is Public Safety Telecommunicators Week. Dispatch, yes. Honoring dispatchers.
Yes, honoring our
Where
dispatchers.
Where would you be without dispatchers?
The hidden faces, the voices behind the telephone that no one really tends to think about. Mm-hmm. And in many cases, they don't know the outcome of many of these calls that they are dispatching out. So, yes, we are giving them a thank you this week and honoring them.
Absolutely. Big salute to the unsung heroes of the law enforcement system. And again, Findlay Police Department Crime Prevention Officer Brian White with us this morning. A lot going on in our crime prevention conversation series. Brian, thanks very much for dropping by. We appreciate it.
You bet, Chris. Thank you.
So last week, a week ago, Wednesday of last week, Governor DeWine delivered his State of the State address, in which he focused primarily, heavily, on issues involving young people in Ohio. State Representative John Cross is with us this morning. Share his reaction.
A young person. I am a young person.
We're all young in spirit.
Good morning.
Thanks for taking the time. The headline quote from the State of the State, this is from the Ohio Capital Journal, "The future is not our own," the governor said. What was your initial take on the governor's speech?
Listen, it was a good speech. We're glad to have him back in the Ohio General Assembly. And then it's important. I think what the governor tried to outline was, for us, a sneak preview of probably his next operating budget. That'll be something that my future colleague will work on. But it was a lot about children, families, youth, giving them a bright future, a hopeful future. But there's a lot of things not in the speech. We didn't hear a single word about jobs. We didn't hear a single word about the economic development, housing. So the legislature still has our own priorities. I think that's what's important about having the executive branch outline their strategies, but we also have ours. And so there's a lot of things that in our response to the governor's State of the State, not to be critical, but we have inflation still rough. I mean, go to the grocery store the other day. I'm trying to buy groceries and it's $200 and you walk out with three bags. You're like, what did I buy? You know, barely nothing. So we've got some our own challenges, and I think we need to make sure that people understand we're highlighting those too.
It's interesting. You mentioned jobs as a priority, and I know we've talked about that before. It's obviously one of your it's been longstanding one of your priorities. The governor did talk about initiatives to improve education and linking education to education requirements to job training.
Yeah, no doubt. Right. That's important. We've been working on a lot of important policy since we've been down there day one with introducing tech cred and stuff like that. But at the end of the day, we're trying to continue to improve the balance between education and career pathways and getting students ready for great opportunities. And so, you know, we're continuing to make tweaks on that. But listen, we've got great schools, great teachers. There's a lot of good things that are happening. But we're trying to, I mean, there's jobs that don't exist today that will exist in the future by the time my two boys, Carson and Connor, become career ready. And so that's what's amazing is, like, how are we preparing for that too?
Yeah.
This morning, my son's at the table studying his cards for his state test today. You know, so those, as a parent, you wake up and think, well, what are we doing? What can we do to do better, to improve upon things? Because, listen, the governor's right. Our children are our future. We have to give them a great pathway for the future success of Ohio. And we want them to stay here and work here and live here and learn here and love it here, just like we did.
I thought it was also interesting. The governor talked about initiatives to, and again, this does relate to jobs, to provide affordable child care and things like that. Health care. He actually tied health care to education, which I thought was kind of interesting.
Yeah, that was an interesting conversation, but child care is spot on. I mean, we've had businesses that were so flustered that they thought they were going to open their own child care facilities to help their employees out. That's the state of the position we're in. And so we're going to continue to look at ways that we can help with that, because that is part of the workforce solution, just as much as housing. So we're seeing housing as a critical need. And let's start calling it workforce housing. It's not affordable housing. Hell, what's affordable anymore, right? So let's get workforce housing. Let's get things in place to help parents when they're working take care of their children. Let's make sure that children have great pathways for success. Let's keep our taxes down. Let's help try to drive inflation down. Gas prices come down. Groceries come down. You know, I hate to say I was a child of the 80s, but, you know, like, let's get back to times where things were great and having a good time. And and not have high cost inflation and high taxes. I'm just speaking as a taxpayer myself.
Yeah. Right. One of the initiatives that the governor did talk about in the speech that he has brought up actually before the speech, it was included in the State of the State address, but he has brought it up prior to that, was his support for legislation that would prohibit cell phone use in the classroom. Let's talk about that, Chris,
because that's an interesting conversation. Because yesterday, here I am in Columbus, Ohio, I get an alert on my phone that Findlay City Schools is in lockdown.
Yeah.
What about a parent who wants to connect with their child? And so, so I'm not so sure that we need to be locking phones away, because I think about, what about emergencies and crisis? Parents are going to want to, you know, is my child okay?
Right.
When my wife was doing some teaching, the best thing they did was they had this old shoe case that you hang on the back of the door, and everyone put their phones in the shoe case, so to speak.
Yeah.
And it wasn't a distraction, but they could have access to it in case of emergencies. I don't think we need to go too far where we're saying, okay, every school district needs to lock away a kid's phone. Mm-hmm. We just need to treat them like adults and make sure that because with that incident yesterday, parents actually, or people, constituents called my office and say, how are we going to handle this situation when there's a crisis at school and you're trying to connect to our kids? And I think that's a fair argument.
Yeah. At the end of the day, did you see any, I want to say, actionable items or nuggets there that you could envision becoming?
Yeah, he talked about the drivers, or the safety of driving, seatbelt laws. You know, we don't have the seatbelts as primary offense here in the state of Ohio. We're going to look at that a little closer, because I'm all for safety. We have distracted driving. You know, we want to keep people safe. It's you know, driving is a privilege. Having a driver's license is a privilege. We want to keep people safe. You know, with the way the distracted driving is, my gosh, if you're not wearing your seatbelt to play defense on your own self and protect your own self. So we're going to look at some things like that, maybe help the governor and some of those policies. But nothing really stood out. I think there were some things that we wish he would have talked about, but I think it's a preview of his future budget and where they want to go with this. And I think we have some of our own priorities in the House that we want to finish up and do, like we talked about, but you know, no new surprises, so to speak.
You mentioned that
lots of spending potential, but we have to curb that. So we have to weight all this with spending, right?
Sure.
How much do we want to invest? How much tax dollars do we want to spend on these initiatives? So it's the balance of, the governor wants to do a lot of good things, but how much money is it going to cost?
And that is always the case. I mean, the state of the state, preview just like the state of the country, becomes a bit of a wish list for the
wrong with that.
Individual who is in charge.
Give him your Christmas list and then you know, see what Santa Claus can deliver on.
Absolutely. And as you mentioned, a lot of this will be dependent on the state budget, which will be, you know, the next cycle. But in the meantime, talking about things that are going on right now in the legislature, is the capital budget. This is the capital budget year. Where do things stand? Because I know we're still
good news. We're still working on it. And I actually had a really positive phone call with Senator McCauley. He's working through his list right now. And so I think it is the goal. The good news I'm hearing in Columbus is that we want to get this done before we go on summer break. So that way, by the time the governor signs the bill and the 90 days go into effect, people can start accessing funds. But all the projects that we have submitted, still in there, still looking great, working with Senator McCauley and some of his things. So we're very positive and very happy to keep moving that forward.
You referenced the items in the strategic investment fund, the one-time funds. What about the regular capital?
So we actually, because we got most of our stuff funded in the Ohio House Bill 2 with the one-time strategic fund, it opened up some more opportunities to look at traditional capital budgets. So we actually have another 8 projects we're looking at. We're working with Senator McCauley because we want to have that a little bit more where it's not us versus them. It's where we can come together and say, okay, we're going to work on this together. And here's our list. So we're doing that right now with Senator McCauley. And I think there's some good extra things that we can hopefully include that are great traditional capital budget items.
And just to clarify, can that be done by the summer break as well?
Yeah, I think what's going to happen is I think you're going to see both things combined into legislation, maybe potentially through one bill, and then we're just an up or down vote on that final bill.
Again, State Representative John Cross with us this morning, kind of an update on things going on and a reaction from the governor's State of the State address last week.
Enjoy this beautiful weather.
Yeah, absolutely. For as long as it lasts.
That's right.
John, thanks very much for taking the time. We appreciate
it. Thank you.
You're listening to Good Mornings with Chris Oakes on 1330 WFIN, WFIN.com, and 95.5 FM.
We interrupt this program to bring you a broken news alert.
Sometimes you don't have to go very far to find the broken news. Charges have been filed against a man accused of biting off part of another person's ear during a fight outside of a bar in Bowling Green. Apparently, this happened early Monday morning outside of the establishment known as the Downtown Sports Bar on Main Street, where Jesus Garcia bit the victim and possibly tossed part of his ear down a sewer. It was not recovered. Mr. Garcia is facing charges, including felonious assault. Reports say the fight began over a stool at the bar. It began over a fight over a stool at the bar. Ended up somebody lost their ear. Mike Tyson style. Wow. That is just... Elsewhere in the broken news, a man is facing charges after he allegedly tried to rob a convenience store with a 5-foot snake around his neck. What's this? Memphis, Tennessee. The dateline on this story where police say Reginald Cook initially went into the store around 2 a.m., and demanded money from the register. The cashier refused, and Mr. Cook left. which is, we've had stories like that in the broken news in the past. Somebody walks in and said, give me all the cash in the register. The cashier says, no. And the guy says, well, okay, and just leaves. And that alone would be enough to make it a weird story. But about an hour later, Mr. Cook returned, this time with a snake wrapped around his neck, and again demanded money. He also reportedly this time reached into his backpack, and that's when the clerk grabbed his own gun in self-defense and dialed 911. Police showed up before any shots were fired, and Mr. Cook was arrested. His family later came by the store to apologize and offered to pay for any damages. His family showed up to apologize. We're sorry about our brother Reginald. He's just kind of weird. I don't know whatever happened to the snake. I'm guessing that Mr. Cook had to give up the snake before he was taken to the slammer. But in any event, speaking of unusual robberies, men... let's see here. Where is this? Brooklyn. Brooklyn, New York. Man is facing 7 years in the slammer after going on a tirade after Dunkin' Donuts could not fill his order for 6 pumpkin donuts. Antonio Rosario, 35-year-old ex-con, who served 2 state prison terms already, allegedly was shouting at one of the employees before leaving the store and then returning with what appeared to be a weapon. Frightened employees then called the police, with one telling the 911 dispatcher he wants 6 pumpkin donuts, but we only have 5 at the moment, so now he's screaming and threatening us. police found Mr. Rosario shortly after at a nearby deli. And he was, in fact, armed with a 9mm semi-automatic firearm with 1 round in the chamber and 13 more in the magazine. As a convicted felon, Mr. Rosario is barred from having a gun, and possessing a firearm as a felon is a federal offense. Additionally, because he has already served 2 state prison terms, now he's facing a third charge, so he's one of those third strike issues now. After a judge denied Mr. Rosario's motion to drop the charges on Second Amendment grounds, he pleaded guilty, and he is currently being held in the Metropolitan Detention Center in Brooklyn, awaiting sentencing in July. So this is not going to end well, and all because he could only get 5 pumpkin donuts instead of 6. Just think about that. You're facing potentially life in prison over 5 donuts instead of 6 pumpkin donuts. Many understand Dunkin' Donuts are good. They're delicious. But is it worth going to prison for life over? Moving on. Also from the general New York area, a toll collector, and this is a crazy story, toll collector on the Jersey Shore says following her gut instinct may have saved her life. Jessica Daly usually works as a toll collector in the Garden State Parkway, but not last Friday. Jessica said bad feelings kept waking her up, including a sense that she was going to be in a car accident. And so she was so rattled, she actually called out of work. She said, I'm just taking the day off. She said, it's not something that she does very often, but something just told her, gut said, you need to stay home today. Few hours later, a garbage truck slammed into the toll plaza collector's booth where she works. The collector who was on duty is hospitalized, but will recover. So thank goodness. Thank goodness that Jessica, she says she broke down when she heard, thanking God that she had the gut instinct to call off that day, but at the same time, praying for the safety of all of those involved. That would just tear me up inside that somebody else was there in my place. But she says following her gut instinct may have saved her life in this instance. So. Is crazy. And finally, in the broken news of this morning, imagine finding out that you have been accidentally divorced. You find out that you were accidentally divorced. Aisha Vardag calls herself one of the top divorce lawyers in London, but her firm appears to have pulled the plug on a marriage before both parties were ready to do so. Court documents refer to the couple as Mr. and Mrs. Williams. I don't know what their real names are, but just referred to as Mr. and Mrs. Williams in the court documents. The couple had been married for more than 20 years when Ms. Vardag's office staff clicked on the wrong file name in an online portal and declared them officially divorced. The mistake was only uncovered 2 days later, and a local judge did not reverse the order, at least not initially. The judge refused to reverse the order. Ms. Vardag stood up for the staffer who made the error and said that the online portal needs an overhaul. I would have to agree. I mean, if I were that couple that ended up accidentally divorced, I'd say, yeah, you might want to look at this. I mean, can it possibly be that easy to divorce a couple just with a couple of clicks on an online website? That is a little disconcerting there. So you might want to look at that. There you go. But imagine getting a notification you've been accidentally divorced from your spouse. There you go. That is today's Broken News Report. An update of the odd and unusual side of the headlines, we now return you to your regularly scheduled programming.
How to stay safe when a tornado threatens. The best thing to do is make sure you're prepared. Know your area's tornado risk. The Midwest has a greater risk for tornadoes. Know the signs of a tornado and sign up for your community's warning system. Pay attention to weather reports and identify and practice going to a safe shelter. Take an active role in your safety. Go to ready.gov and search tornado for more information. This message provided by WFIN.
Time now for your daily download, the numbers behind the news and the statistics that shape our lives. Of course, one of the top news stories this week has been a jury selection in former President Trump's hush money trial that is going on right now. They've already dismissed like more than half the jury pool. They have seated a handful of jurors. They have yet to complete the jury. But a recent survey of 1,000 U.S. adults asked, how important is it to serve on jury duty if you are called? How do you feel about jury duty? And I know that's something that a lot of folks, we kind of joke about ways to get out of jury duty. But 51% of adults in this survey said that it is very important to serve on jury duty if called. And it really is. I mean, it's the way that the whole system functions. Without juries, the criminal justice system would grind to a halt. 51% recognize that it's very important. 29% said that it is somewhat important to serve on a jury if called. 8% said it's not too important. And 4% said it is not at all important. And they also asked, have you ever received a summons to participate in jury duty? 44% said that they have received a notice, a summons for jury duty more than once. 21% said that they had once in their lifetime. And 32% actually said that they had never been called for jury duty. So just kind of interesting with respect to jury duty and the way we answer. I thought it was interesting in Donald Trump's, there was the story earlier this week of the one guy who got out. Again, you talk about ways of getting out of jury duty, and we kind of joke about this. One guy was dismissed from serving on the jury for Donald Trump's trial because his wedding would likely fall during the course of the trial. That the trial would last long enough, it would interfere with his wedding, so he was dismissed. I thought, man, if there is ever an argument for marriage, and in this case, a well-timed marriage, that is it. And what a story that would be for folks years in, you know, anniversary celebrations years from now. I'd be talking about how their wedding got him out of serving on the trial. The case against Donald Trump. I'm going to talk about an event happening around town next week. As a matter of fact, just under a week from now, in the ongoing celebration of their 50th anniversary, the Children's Mentoring Connection is honoring those who have made a profound impact on the lives of generations of young people in the community. And Stacy Shaw is with us from Children's Mentoring Connection, along with Kathy Pfeiffer. Thank you very much for dropping by and this morning. First of all, we mentioned at the beginning of the year, or I think tail end of last year, 50th anniversary celebration, and you have all kinds of things that are going on. This is one of those special events.
Yes, yes. Good morning, Chris. Yes, we are excited to be continuing our celebration throughout the year. And with this event, we're really excited to be, as the title says, a celebration of connection. So really, and not only just the connections within our agency, we really want to be a true community event and invite everyone who's made a connection with somebody. And that can be little things to bigger things.
Yeah. We talk about the fact, again, 50 years, you're talking about generational connections through CMC.
Yes, absolutely. So, and we know that some of our matches have stayed connected for multiple years, and Kathy can speak to her match with Heidi that's lasted 42 years. So we really just, you know, have the pleasure of connecting people, and then the rest of the work just happens.
Yeah, I thought that was interesting. Stacy says several years, Kathy. It's been more than 40 years, in fact. She kind of downplayed that a little bit.
I know. It's very funny. Who would have thought? But Heidi was the most loving child, which made it very easy for me. Mm-hmm. She enjoyed anything and everything that I suggested doing. I had no idea that I was influencing her life. Mm-hmm. As we reflect back, that has come as a surprise to me.
I was going to say, could you have imagined when you started that 40 years later, the two of you would still have, you know, that connection?
You know, Chris, I didn't even think about it.
Yeah.
And so it was easy because she reached out to me as we became adults just mm-hmm. as much, mm-hmm. probably more than I reached out to her. So the friendship built, and then she had children, and that, and I enjoyed being with them, and so that friendship built, yeah. and we're just family friends.
And that story is not unique, Stacey. I mean, you have a number of mentors and mentees that maintain that relationship, that one-to-one, even after they're out of the program, per se, formally.
Yes, and that's one of the unique things about our program, mm-hmm. unlike other clubs that kids may be able to join, mm-hmm. is really making that connection with that other individual. And so through our, you know, through our program, if they're matched in our community program, they can formally stay a part of our program until they would graduate from high school. But once that time has come that they have gotten that far, and some of them don't go that entire time with our program, mm-hmm. that those relationships really continue. And I was just talking with a university student last night who was matched with one of our high school students, and he's going to be graduating from college, and the young man in high school is going to be a senior next year. And you know, as the college student goes on to further his education, he's going to be moving to Ohio State. I know that the two of them are going to stay connected as yeah. well. So it's just us getting things started.
How often does it happen where you have kids that were mentees grow up to then become mentors?
So we do have that happen. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and some of them will even do that as high school students. So we have, because we now have high school students able to mentor, we'll have that happen as well. So they could be involved in our school program or our community program, mm-hmm. but they want to learn to give back a little bit. I think yeah. that's really important that our mentors teach that to them.
Who knows better how beneficial the program can be than those who have grown up in it?
Right. Absolutely. And yeah. I had this year when I interviewed a high school student to become a mentor, I didn't even know she was in our program originally.
Yeah.
And she had shared, and when I said, why do you want to do this? She had shared that she was in our program in the third grade at Bigelow Hill. And at the time that year, her parents were going through a divorce. Hmm. So one of her highlights every week was knowing that she had that person that was going to be there that she could yeah. connect with. And it made such a profound effect, and probably much more so than her mentor knew, that when she became a high school student and that opportunity came up, she wanted to give back as well.
And I imagine, Kathy, there were incidents where you could reflect on that, where you have more of an impact than maybe what you realized at the time.
Chris, when my during that first year, one time my little sister got in my car and she said, Kathy, you show up every week. Mm-hmm. And it took me back. I didn't know what to say in response to that, mm-hmm. but that's how
not just an offhand. Yeah, that's not just an offhand comment.
No, that shows you how important yeah. it is in their lives
yeah.
to have that connection. And with the school program, it's only for about an hour mm-hmm. that they are together, but it means a lot to
yeah.
them.
And the reason I bring up that going full circle with some of the mentees who will grow up to either become part of the program or contribute in other ways, that's really the story of the guest speaker for this Celebration of Connections on Tuesday of next week.
Yeah, so he's really speaking to, he's going to talk about human lighthouses. So the book that he wrote is The Lighthouse Effect, How Ordinary People Can Make an Extraordinary Impact. And so he's going to share a few different things. For him, he was a person who grew up in foster care. And unfortunately, he was in an abusive foster home at one point, ran away from that as a teenage boy sitting in a social worker's office, and unfortunately continues to be a story that we hear. Mm-hmm. His social worker said to him, you know, I've gone through my list. I truly don't have anyone else that I can place you with. Do you know of anyone that might be able to take you in, even just for the evening? It was around the holidays,
yeah.
Definitely a difficult time. And he had said, you know, I remember this man in the Outward Bound program. One time I overheard him say, if I had a child, I wish he would be like Steve. Maybe you could try to call him.
Hmm.
And he called him.
Wow.
And it was the holidays, and he shouldn't have been at his office that day. But on that particular day, he was. He was there doing some paperwork, getting caught up, and he answered the phone, and he said yes. And that yes for that day turned into the yes until he graduated from high school.
Wow.
And so you just never know. Had mm-hmm. Steve never heard him say that, mm-hmm. he didn't even know that, you know, how yeah. connected he was.
Steve Pemberton is his name, would be the guest speaker for this event. Again, it is coming up on Tuesday, and this is at Weinbrenner, right?
It is at Weinbrenner, so we're going to be holding it there. It is a free public event, and it's a great way to thank those mentors or those individuals in your life who have truly made a difference, and maybe they didn't even know. So we do have registration, but you know, if it's Tuesday night and you just happen to be free around 7 o'clock, we'd love for you to stop by because we really want to celebrate that opportunity.
And Kathy, what an honor to be able to have a hand in bringing Steve here for this, what should be a very powerful evening.
I do feel honored, and I'm so excited about it. After reading his books, his first book about his life in the foster care system, I found two quotes that were things that my little sister had said to me. And even though it's a little different upbringing between foster care and mentoring, has the same effect.
Yeah. And I wonder, in Steve's case, and Stacey, I'm sure you see it all the time, there are certain individuals that maybe, I don't want to say society writes off, but maybe doesn't have very high expectations of, given their upbringing and their circumstances. And here's a perfect example of the potential that is still there.
Right. And that's kind of the basis for Steve's first story and first book, which is A Chance in the World, because he, you know, has overheard people, and you probably yourself heard people say, that kid doesn't stand a chance in the world.
Yeah.
And so he twisted that and said, you know, a chance in the world. If somebody steps in, they do have a chance.
And how many of us have maybe said that, not really thinking the whole thing through, that everybody still has potential? This will be a very, very powerful evening. Again, it is Tuesday of next week, 7 o'clock at Weinbrenner, and is free.
So. It is free, yes, absolutely.
So we've got a link up on our webpage for more information. You can go to goodmornings.net. Again, Stacey Shaw with us from the Children's Mentoring Connection. And Kathy Pfeiffer, thanks very much for dropping by. Always great to see you.
You're welcome.
Appreciate you dropping by today.
Thank you, Chris.
And with that, we finish up this morning's podcast. Want to thank all of our guests for joining us on the program today. Remember, you can get more information about all of the topics that we talk about each and every day on the program at our webpage, goodmornings.net. While you're there, you can also find links to connect with us on social media, Facebook and X, formerly Twitter. Also, you can sign up for our daily email newsletter. There's a link to shoot us an email if there's something you want to share directly. It's all right there at goodmornings.net, our little corner of the World Wide Web. So until tomorrow morning, that is Good Mornings for this morning. Now that you've had a good morning, go on out and make it a good day. We'll catch you back here tomorrow.